In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
You can file today's story under extremely well-timed.
Credit card statements made public this week reveal an astounding picture of how Ryerson's student union is spending student levies. Among the most questionable and expensive charges, almost $700 on an Airbnb, $2,500 at a Cineplex rec room, $2,200 at EFS, a Toronto nightclub.
That information was brought to light in the student newspaper because that's what student newspapers do. But as the scandal exploded beyond campus, it played out against the backdrop of the Ontario Conservative government's new tuition regulations. Those regulations will allow university students to opt out of paying for what they consider non-essential activities. So are student newspapers essential enough to demand student funding? It's going to be up to the universities to figure that out. But if they say no, then it will be up to the students to determine, each of them, if they want their fees going to support campus journalism. Now, nobody is expecting the world to cry for student journalists' career prospects. But what happens to all the money that flows through these universities and student unions if nobody is on the beat or at the meetings? Because if there's one thing we've learned this week, it's how badly every organization that handles cash on behalf of its members needs a watchdog. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Sharina Harris is a news editor at The Eye-Opener, which broke this story this week, and also the managing editor at New Wave Magazine. What the hell is going on at Ryerson?
So, last week, The Eye-Opener broke the story that our student union had misspent thousands of dollars in funds, and we've confirmed credit card purchases showing thousands of dollars spent in food, alcohol, clubs, sporting equipment, hotels. Things that we can see so far aren't necessarily events for students. They seem to be events for the executives. And all of this came out last week after a board of directors meeting where there was a motion put forward to increase financial transparency because the student union actually hasn't submitted any of their receipts for their credit card purchases since they came into office in May.
Who has this credit card or who has access to it? Who's alleged to have spent this money?
That's a great question. So before all of this happened on Tuesday, one of our news reporters, Emma, actually broke a story about the RSU breaking their financial policies and bylaws because they got rid of the general manager. They had taken the amount that was supposed to be on the GM's card and broken it down between the VP operations and the president. And they both had credit cards, which were supposed to have a total amount of $10,000 each. And we can see now that...
How did they spend so much money on credit cards with a $10,000 limit?
So it's not clear whether that was an actual limit. That's a number the president gave us. And so maybe that was the amount that was supposed to be on them. We're not really sure about that. But what we do know is that they both had these credit cards. And when we asked the president whether he thought he was breaking bylaws, he was like, no, this is just something that we had to do. And so even before the board meeting, there was already this sense of like, why do they have private credit cards? He did say, the president said at the board meeting, that any full-time or part-time RSU staff member could use their credit cards. He said he usually approves the purchases, but he couldn't confirm that he had approved all of them. And so his name being on the statement that we've seen doesn't necessarily mean he was the one tapping the card at all of those places, but certainly context that, again, he could have provided it and he didn't.
What's on those statements? What kind of purchases and what kind of money are we talking about?
In terms of the total amount of money, one of the BOD members who saw the statements said that the total spent was $250,000. We have not confirmed that number because we've only seen a small sliver of the statements. However, in the statements that we have seen, we can confirm that it's thousands of dollars. There is a purchase of over $1,000 to Nick's Sporting Goods. There's a purchase of, I believe, over $2,000 to the Cineplex rec room, which everyone is saying, well, it's not even that good. How can you spend that much money there? There were a lot of purchases of food at a spring roll restaurant. There was a purchase at Hayes Lounge in Mississauga, which is a shisha lounge. There were purchases
How much was the shisha lounge, just for the record?
At Hayes, it was $347.
That's a lot for a shisha lounge. I heard there's a lot of LCBO ones, too.
There are. And what's interesting is there's an LCBO, there's one or two LCBO purchases in Toronto. There's also one in Orillia. And that one was made around the time of June 2nd. And what we know is that the RSU was in Orillia for a private meeting on May 27th. And then around the time of the LCBO purchase in Orillia, they also made a purchase at Cedarama, the restaurant at the casino. And they're all kind of, my cottage is there, I know, they're all kind of in driving distance. And so that was actually the private meeting they had there was where they voted to increase their own salaries by $11,000.
I'm sorry?
And that motion was put forward by a student who the eye-opener cannot confirm exists because we've contacted over 70 current and former board members and no one knows if that student is real. So
I'm just going to recap because that was pretty amazing. At a meeting in or around Orillia where purchases are being made at LCBOs and a restaurant next to the casino, the student government voted to increase their own salaries by $11,000.
Yep. So they, because of that raise, they made $47,000. And that motion was, the motion to raise their salaries by $11,000 was put forward by a student named Tejinder Kaur. The eye-opener has not been able to speak to Tejinder. We don't know if they are a Ryerson student. No one who we've spoken to has given us contact information or said that they know them.
Do you know that they exist?
We haven't confirmed if they exist. And because of privacy reasons, we haven't been able to find out from Ryerson. They can't say whether or not Tejinder is a Ryerson student.
This is a student union that gets to spend how much in student fees?
Over $2 million. I believe it's $2.4 or $2.7 million in student fees.
Where does the student union get their money?
The student union gets money from Ryerson students.
And they haven't provided receipts for anything bought with their credit cards since May.
Yes. And you might be thinking, like, how can they do that? There must be some oversight.
Yes.
And usually there is. But when this executive team came into office in May, they fired their general manager. And the general manager is the person who's supposed to oversee their finances. And so actually this all really goes back to when they did that, because they got rid of that position and they said, okay, we're going to create two new positions. And they have hired someone for the one HR position. They haven't hired someone, to my knowledge, for the other position. And so they do have the financial controller still, but obviously she's still here waiting for them to provide the receipts. So there hasn't been the oversight necessary that other years' executive teams might have had.
So this whole thing blew up at the board of directors meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Without getting us lost in the specifics of arcane university rules and regulations, what was that meeting like when it finally came out just how much money was gone?
It was really wild. They had this huge discussion, and when one of the directors actually was holding those statements and started reading from them, other people in the room were like shouting. They were like, let him speak. And the president kept saying, you know, you can't read the statements. He didn't directly refer to the campus media being there, but he did say, we're going to have to do an in-camera session for that because the receipts haven't been submitted yet. So people were shouting. They really wanted to know what was going on. And a lot of directors were saying things like they've had students asking them about this and they were elected by students to do their job. And now students can't even get answers. And they were saying, a lot of them said, you know, I feel left in the dark. Why can't you give me context? And people kept saying, okay, give us context now. And the president said, well, I'll explain everything after February 1st, which is when their deadline is to submit all their receipts. And people said, we're all here in this room right now. Why don't you just give context right now? And he didn't do that.
This is all kind of happening amidst a bigger drama that's going on about campus press in Ontario.
Yes. Very early on when we were working on the story on Thursday, we kind of thought, uh-oh, because we could see how our reporting would be used to support a certain narrative about why ancillary fees should be optional. And so we weren't surprised on the weekend when Doug Ford tweeted out CBC's version of our story and said, this is why ancillary fees should be optional. Students shouldn't have to pay to a student union who is corrupt and misspending their money. And luckily for us, what a lot of prominent journalists have said in our defense online, especially on Twitter, is that, yes, the Ryerson Students Union did this and your ancillary fees go towards them, but your ancillary fees also go towards the student newspaper who broke this story. And so if we hadn't had that funding, we probably wouldn't have been working for over 6 hours on Thursday night to confirm these statements and break this story.
How is the eye-opener funded?
We are funded by students.
How much?
I believe that every student gives $7 per year to the eye-opener.
And what happens under Doug Ford's changes to the tuition regulation?
We don't know for sure what's going to happen. We've heard from the minister's office that universities will be able to decide what constitutes an essential fee. And so we can assume that there's going to be some lobbying from the eye-opener and other groups to show the university this is why we should be deemed an essential service. And we hope that students would see the kind of reporting that we do this week and always and say, we want to support you and we want to pay for you because you do good journalism and we wouldn't know about this huge story otherwise. I know that the eye-opener is working with other on-campus groups and is also working with other student newspapers across the province to put some things forward. And I don't know the specifics on that because it's all so new and there's still a lot of details that from the government that we're kind of missing. But yeah.
Convincing the public that you're an essential service is not something unique to student media at the moment. How does that fight feel? You must have had a lot of conversations about that in your office since the announcement came.
We haven't had a lot of announcements about convincing people students were essential in terms of asking students to pay for us. At this point, I think we're pushing to hope that the university will deem us an essential service. And so it's more so kind of showing to the university why we're essential, which in itself can be a hard sell considering we write stories about the administration as well. But the Ryerson administration has always been really open to commenting on things, and they've worked really well. Obviously, they have to because we have student journalists who keep them accountable on things. And so we hope that they will deem us an essential service. But if that doesn't work out, I certainly hope that the events of this week will show students why we should be an essential service. I think that for this story and even other stories, you know, Ryerson submits a rezoning application for a new building on campus that they want to put the Faculty of Science in. But all of the smaller stories on campus too, the eye-opener is still covering those. And I'm sure that almost every student at Ryerson has learned one new thing about their school that impacts them in some way from reading the eye-opener.
What's the atmosphere been like amongst the campus press in Ontario just since last year's election?
I think certainly since the announcement about ancillary fees, we've all just been kind of looking to get more information, and it's hard to even like put out a statement or say definitively this is how we're feeling when we still don't know things. And at the same time as we're trying to figure out what's going to happen to us, we're also still trying to report on the story. And in this weird way, we've also become the story. And so I was working on a story last week about a few stories, actually, just about all the changes to OSAP and tuition. And I had contacted the minister's office for comment. And in her response to me, she said, universities will be able to determine what constitutes an essential fee. And that was news to us. We hadn't seen anyone else reporting that universities would choose because we thought that the government was going to be choosing. And so that was significant in terms of we shared that news and we put that in our stories. But our editor-in-chief also sent that to all the other student newspapers. And he said, okay, guys, now we have confirmation that the universities are going to be choosing. So that was like one specific instance where we were reporting on it, but it was also something that was information that we needed to know. And so because of that, I can see student newspapers across Ontario kind of leading this effort on ancillary fees, because not only are we impacted by it, but we're also communicating with our administrations, with the government on a regular basis, just doing our jobs. And so it kind of lends itself to us learning about that information naturally.
The next big break in the story, I guess, will come on February 1st when we hopefully find out what happened to the money. Is this definite? Are we even going to get answers?
Yeah. So we kind of thought, okay, so Thursday night is over. We're going to wait till February 1st. And that's going to be, we know now that there's an emergency board meeting on February 1st. It's open to students. There's already a Facebook group for students who want to go. And there's a lot of students who want to go and get answers. But even on Friday night, bleeding into Saturday morning, we were hearing from board members about something that had happened, which is that the executive team, the five members, had an emergency meeting and they voted to suspend the president and the vice president operations, both of whom had credit cards. We had only seen the statements from the president's card, but the vice president also had a credit card, which in itself broke RSU bylaws. And so they were voted to be suspended, and they lost access to their emails. We've been emailing them. It just bounces back to us. Apparently, they've also lost access to their office. But then a lot of board members are saying, well, the bylaws say we have to be present for any kind of meeting. You can't hold this meeting without us. This is an illegitimate suspension. Mm. And so someone actually said they're trying to shut down the RSU and made some comparison of like the U.S. government shut down. And like if the RSU is shut down, they can't pay their employees. And there's kind of some confusion around what the suspension actually means. But certainly some developments like that could continue throughout the week. We're certainly always awake late at night, texting each other, being like, okay, what's going to be the next thing? But certainly this Friday, when we have the emergency board meeting, we're going to be following very closely the developments at that.
Thanks, Sherina.
Thank you.
Sherina Harris is a news editor at The Eye Opener. But this story goes beyond campus. So we wanted to illustrate that by bringing in one of our favorite guests, Globe and Mail investigative reporter Robin Doolittle, who is also an Eye Opener alumni and a fierce advocate for the kind of investigative journalism that broke this story open. Robin, why does the story that Sherina and her team told about Ryerson matter to people beyond the campus?
Oh my God, it was pretty perfect timing, right, to have that come out now. On campuses where there are huge multi-million dollar budgets and lots of entities with lots of money, the only people watching the purse with, you know, a student accountability in mind is campus media. And so I think that the brilliance of that story is obviously the reason it's kind of gone viral is that people just have a knee-jerk reaction. This is obviously so wrong. And the only reason that we know about it is because of the Eye Opener, Ryerson's independent student newspaper.
It's like the old adage about government wasteful spending writ small, right? You can see it happen in this small ecosystem with $250,000, and you can see where all the money went, and the press exposes it. He goes bananas. And this is the same thing you guys are trying to do, or anybody else is trying to do.
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, campus media, you and I both, you know, kind of cut our teeth on the campus media scene. And it's a little, I don't know, it's a dress rehearsal for the big stage, right? There's the administration, which is the quote unquote, you know, the bureaucracy or the government. You have student government, you have campus security, which is kind of like police. You have, the education system wrapped up in there. You have, you know, the politics of different interest group working. And it's really where you can figure out how to cover all of those things and manage sources and take risks and how to actually find a story and develop news judgment. That is absolutely the place where you learn that. And you see those same types of stories being broken by student journalists because we're all doing the same thing, which is journalism.
You tweeted at Doug Ford this weekend when he mentioned the story.
I did. Maybe I'm hurting the cause more than anything by doing that. But
you like to hold people accountable, and that's what you were doing.
Yeah, I think I don't want to pretend to be in the mind of the premier. So this is just purely my speculation based off of, you know, what I know of the Fords and the conservative government and thinking back to my time at Ryerson and dealing with the campus political scene. I think there is a frustration around some maybe conservative groups that a lot of these student activities, like the student unions, for example, are heavily aligned with NDP causes. They're heavily aligned with this Canadian Federation of Students, which is a national and has provincial branches lobbying group. And so maybe there's a feeling that why are students funding all of this quote unquote activism? And so this is just my guess, is that they're sort of more of the target of this stuff. The Ryerson Students Union, which is maybe spending $250,000 improperly, that's the target. But what I was trying to remind the premier of is the only reason that you know about that questionable spending is because of campus media. And
right.
Actually, when I was at Ryerson, I spent most of my time as the editor-in-chief working on an investigation into how this national student lobbying group had basically gone campus to campus, sort of infiltrating, for lack of a better word, the campus scene there and getting them on side and then collecting those dues and questioning whether that was best serving students at each of these universities. And that's something that we devoted a lot of resources to. And again, that story would never have been told without campus media. So I think that there's a bit of an irony there that maybe the target of what these cuts might be about, the problems may actually escalate without campus media there to watch them.
And I think it's funny that the campus media gets lumped in with these kind of student activism groups because, you know, to your point, if you look at campus media across Canada, it's not just liberal journalists coming out of here. It's investigative journalists. It's future Sun Media employees and National Post employees, not just Toronto Star employees. Do you know? Like, it's...
Yeah, if you actually read campus campus papers, and I mean, why would most people read them? But they're actually, I would say, by and large, like, very tough on student union groups. They're like, student journalists are just as frustrated with a lot of the stuff that they see with the student unions as anybody else, probably more so. So again, maybe there's this monolithic idea of like the hippy dippy activist university student. Not there's anything wrong with activism, but like this far left communist socialist like newspapers. That's not what campus media looks like at all. They're just like, you know, quote unquote grown up reporters who are just out trying to find a good story. And when you're working on a good story, what are you looking at? You're looking at power. You're looking at money. So you're looking at the school administration. You're looking at your student politics. You're chasing all of those same leads. It's not about politics. It's about chasing the most important story.
What happens to the Canadian media at large if campus media loses funding?
Well, that's the other big part of this problem is, you know, in addition to having, you know, losing a watchdog at universities, you're going to see, a cascade effect across the country's the quality of young journalists. I really spent a lot of time at Ryerson at the Eye Opener developing my skills. I really credit my time there with preparing me for the big leagues. And I can't think of a colleague of mine who didn't spend time, a lot of time at the campus paper, because it is where you develop your skills, your new sense on how to turn around a story quickly. And like, that's where you make mistakes too. And the stakes are a lot smaller. That's where you can really develop, you know, I want to take this risk, or I want to spend time investigating this thing. You don't want to be doing that at an internship where you're kind of for the first time at a major paper. So especially now in the gig economy where so much of the work is going to be freelance, you're just removing this hugely valuable training ground for journalists. So you're in school, but you're also getting real on the ground experience at the campus press. And also the networking that you have as a journalist. Like, I can't tell you how many times I go out with young student journalists, because I live that life too. Like, I feel a really strong connection. This is a really important part of a journalist's life, yeah. I think, is their time in university. And I think most people, no shade to J schools, think of their time at the campus media as more valuable. And so losing that will have, I think, an impact on the national scene.
Thanks, Robin.
Thank you.
Robin Doolittle, investigative reporter for The Globe and Mail. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Find all of our other episodes there. Leave us a comment, ask us a question. And hit us up on Twitter, at TheBigStoryFPN, or at FrequencyPods, if you like more than one of our shows. And find all of our shows, especially The Big Story, everywhere you get podcasts: Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast. When you find us, don't forget to rate and review. We really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
Hi there. I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.